Let's Talk Letts, an original podcast from the Lettings Hub.
Our regular listeners to Let's Talk Letts will always know that we end every podcast with a funny story or anecdote of something that's happened in your career, which I'm sure anybody that we have spoken to that has run a letting agency or has worked in letting seems to have like a till roll of actual examples. But have you got a good one for us today?
There is one for me. So we, about 12 months ago, moved into a new office in, we're based just near Gatwick, and we only had one set of keys and at the time, and I was in a meeting room and I noticed that one of the corridor lights had gone off, and it was about 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and I finished the meeting, all the lights were off, tried to go and leave, and they locked me in, and they locked me in across the whole building.
Oh no.
And also my phone was in my car that was downstairs, so I had no way of contacting anyone, so I had to stay. And I had to just try and wait, and my wife didn't know where I was. Office was new, so I had nowhere to sleep, nothing. I was sort of going into panic mode. Do I break the glass? Will that set off the alarm? Like all these sorts of things. So in the end, I just stayed there, and then my colleagues came in 7 o'clock the next morning, found me on the floor, just sort of in survival mode. And yeah,
oh, wow.
That was it. So yeah, nothing too hairy other than part of my sort of professional integrity and soul was left on that floor. And I moved from that floor away to never remind me of that moment again. Dark days.
Do you think they actually did it on purpose?
I think they might have done, Heidi. I'm not sure, there was a lot of laughing rather than sympathy for my situation. You know, that could have been
especially because it's your family.
And I'm a hungry guy as well, so not having dinner, the hangover.
Yeah. I'm going to take you back to the dark ages when we used to have paper diaries, and I never used to be the most organised of people, so I had a habit of turning up at the wrong place for my meetings. So I'd agree to meet with somebody, assume that they were expecting me to go to their office, and quite often I'd turn up at their place. They weren't there because they are on their way to my office, which when I was working in London was never too much of a problem because you're only a short walk or two journey away to meeting up somewhere. But quite a while ago, and ironically because I live in Reading, I'd arranged a meeting with an insurer for a number of my colleagues to come to Reading to pitch to the insurer for a potential new business deal. I thought I'd had it all organised. It was a short little journey for me. As it turned out, as we were all arriving at their offices in London, we were getting calls from the office in Bristol to say that a party from the insurer had turned up and were ready for the meeting that we'd organised.
Oh,
it was laughable at the time. And eventually we did win the deal. But I must admit, after that day, I never made the same mistake again. And I am grateful now for technology putting things electronically into my life.
Yeah, absolutely. When Colin asked this yesterday, or I read through the notes, I had that instant panic. Oh my God, nothing funny has ever happened. And then I started to remember. And I've written some down, but I could go on and on. I won't. We had one where we had a tenant turn up for a checkout, and she was so drunk that she just laid on the ground. So that was that. Yeah, she would just. I wasn't there, unfortunately. Our inventory clerk ran, and she said, "Yeah, she did turn up. But she was a bit drunk." I said, "What do you mean?" She just laid on the carpet and was just rolling there on the carpet. And I was devastated that I wasn't there for that one. So we did a management takeover, and the landlord had rented the property to, it was during COVID actually, there was a homeless guy in the town that, and she was, under pressure, from neighbours in their village to help him out. So she did. Lovely guy, but he did have his fair share of issues. Anyway, he had to leave the property, so he was quite problematic throughout the tenancy, and we had to go and do the checkout. And he sent me an email to tell me that he'd booby-trapped the house so that when we were going around, we wouldn't know what we'd come across. We turned up to do with the locksmith, and he'd written in brown paint, "This is my shit," on the wall, and left a huge knife by the stairs. So that was one scenario. And many, quite early on in my career, I did a valuation at a property. It was an ex-council property. The woman was lovely, really very quiet, quite unassuming. Walking around the property in Angara, you'll understand this, you know, you're just, you know, not really kind of taken in, looking at the decor. First of all, she had a stripper pole at the end of the bed. So I was like, okay, that's one thing. And then there was all these abstract black and white photos on the wall. You know, we can't really see what they are. And then when I focused on them, they were all of her nipples.
Oh, wow.
And that, yeah. So that was kind of off me, and I was like, is the stripper pole staying? Gladly it wasn't, it didn't stay. So those are just a couple of mine, but I could go on and on about these, but I just picked three that came to mind quickly.
I also have many, many stories. I mean, yeah. I used to work in a room that managed between 5,000 and 6,000 tenancies in one room. We had loads of property managers. So we had the most ridiculous things happen in this room. Some of the ones that I could think of off the top of my head. I had a tenant once call me on a Monday morning, first thing. And they said, just let you know, on Saturday night, I looked out the window and I saw a man walking around the streets with a chainsaw. And I was like, right. I was like, okay, so you waited until Monday morning to call your property manager about this. You didn't think that it might be a good idea to ring the police on Saturday night, not wait until Monday. So, yeah, that was one. I've had to have awkward... I had an old lady call me once and tell me that my tenant, who was her opposite neighbour, was having... very loud activities with her partner during the summer with the windows open. And could I ring my tenant and tell her not to do that? It's like, no, I can't ring the tenant and tell them not to do that. Your story, Tracy, actually, about the shit on the walls. I actually did have a tenant fall out with their landlord. And when the landlord finally got them out, we got into the property and they had smeared their own feces all over the wall.
Wow.
Yeah. and then... on the same subject, I also wandered into my property management hub, and one of my property managers was on the phone to a tenant who his front door opened onto the street. So the pavement was literally outside his front door, and he rang my property manager and said, I woke up this morning and I went to leave the house, and when I opened the front door, there was a human turd on the pavement outside the front door. And my property manager was like, okay. And he was like, I want you to sort that out and get it sorted. She was like, no, it's a public street. Like, there's nothing to do with me.
it's mad, the expectation of the letting agent, isn't it? You know,
yeah.
We had one where a tenant and a neighbour had got into a bit of an altercation. The neighbour was arrested, you know, because they'd been abusive. I think they'd gone to hit a police officer, all of these things. And they were held in the cell for 20 hours. And they then called us and said they wanted an apology from the landlord and the tenant because they'd held in a cell for 20 hours. what has that got to do with the letting agent?
Yeah.
It does make you laugh.
We were at a bit of a get together, weren't we, Tracy, back in November, I think. And we were kind of having this conversation with a few other people there, and they all work in lettings. And the stories, it just went on all night. Mm. But my funniest one from that whole night was these two ladies that worked in Gainsborough.
I know what you're
saying.
They
have this tenant. He comes in.
Yeah.
He sits on the chair in their reception, wets himself, and then leaves.
Yeah.
Wow.
And what? They were so casual about it, Heidi, weren't they?
Yeah,
they were like,
so casual.
He just comes in, wets himself and leaves. And we were like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
He just comes in. Yeah. It was just so casual.
Yeah. Bizarre. Anyway.
more than a state agent, a letting agent, a solicitor said, I need you to do an urgent probate valuation. Can you get yourself their PDQ? So me and the surveyor literally went that afternoon. We got down this particular street. There was loads of cars everywhere. Couldn't park anywhere. And this is why a cottage where there was no windows on the front. It was all on the back. And there was a long cottage. And what we didn't have to get in. So he went in one window. I went in the other. Went into this lovely garden. Couldn't see anything. And then we looked through the window. And there was everyone standing around the coffin.
Oh, gone. What? Awkward.
Do you know what? I thought a lot about this because I knew I was coming on, and I was trying to think about it because it's been quite a few years since I was like on the ground as a letting agent, and obviously like back in the day you'd have so many. And I had this, I remember as a junior negotiator having this story that that basically I went to a house that we'd just taken on and met the owner, and he was a bit unhappy. And he was telling me as he was showing me around the house that they basically had like a, I don't think an infestation is the right word, but like basically their garden had been full of badgers, and badgers are protected. And so it makes it really difficult to sell the house because you've got these protected badgers. And he was like, but I've moved them on and they're all gone. And I'm talking to him and I'm like, but there's a dead badger in your pond. And he was like, what? And I was like, there's a dead badger in your pond. So he walks down to the pond and I'm thinking like, I don't really want to be here for that. Like, I'm not good with dead things. And he starts like prodding it with a stick just to make sure like wasn't, you know, like a cat or something. And it was definitely a badger. It'd obviously gone for a drink, got stuck. Anyway, so at that point I'm like, okay, clearly a badger. I should probably leave. And he was, he then proceeded to winch it out with a spade. And like, obviously the smell then gets you and you're like, what? Like, this is not good. Then he starts digging a hole for it. And I'm stood there thinking, what the heck is going on? Now, badger deaths, you're supposed to report, especially when you're under a protection order. And he's going to me whilst burying this badger. You mustn't tell anybody about this. This is, you know, like, and I'm just stood there at like 22 thinking, oh my God, what am I witnessing? this guy is like, he's basically asking me to be part of his like badger mafia. So that's always,
I bet there
been
was a lot more buried under that grass. 100%.
It was clearly like a badger graveyard. But I literally, honestly, until like recently, I didn't tell anybody over a decade later because I was like, oh yeah, the badgers. I can't tell anybody about the badgers.
Even when I see one at the side of the road, I'm just like, oh, I bet someone's dumped it there. Like, you know, yeah. I just like, they can't all just appear and all get run over. Like, there's just too many, isn't there, in terms of what happens. But they are protected, aren't they?
I've never seen one alive. Maybe this podcast is turning into like a conspiracy podcast now.
Yeah. Maybe we should. We're going to research badger deaths.
Yeah, badger deaths.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Oh. Early in my career, I learned don't judge a book by its cover. So I think that's quite prominent for me because people, I think, judge me for being this vivacious person. But I can be a strong negotiator. And I was 19 years old. I mean, I look back now and just think, what the hell are hunters doing? But I was 19. They gave me a mini and they put me up in Manchester. I was from a tiny village in Yorkshire, outside of York. And they put me on Deansgate in Manchester. I was literally loving life. And this chap came in to view an apartment, and people had said, you know, there's professional footballers and all sorts of Coronation Street and people that live in this block. So you've got to be careful because you think that they might be just wanting to see that it's where Ryan Giggs lives. This guy comes in, and for a start, he had a La Senza lingerie bag with him. So he was wanting to view. And at this time, we're going 20 years ago, it was over £1 million. So, you know, I was thinking if you're buying a sensor and you're buying at least agent provocateur, isn't it? Let's be honest. So I took one look at this guy and was like, you can't afford this apartment. So anyway, all the people at Hunters moved back because at this point I'm completely oblivious. Start taking those debt. Anyway, it was Gary Neville. I had no idea.
Oh, wow.
And then I had to show him around this apartment. And it gets even worse, though, because halfway around, I says, oh, my brother really loves Man U. And he says, oh, would you like my autograph? And I went, no, would you like mine?
Did he take it well, though?
No.
Oh, no, he's not a good sport, really.
I'm not into all of that. And I just was like, oh, no, I don't need your autograph. I'm trying to be polite. I was like, oh, you can have mine. Yeah. But obviously, it was because he was famous and I wasn't famous and I'm not famous. So, yeah. But, you know, I genuinely had judged him thinking he's got no money, he can't buy this house. But actually, yeah, he probably could and probably bought the whole block if he wanted to.
About these funny stories and try to work out which is the right one or which is the right tone of 30 years in wherever. There are some that probably aren't right for airing on here. I'll give you one though that really makes me smile to this day. I'm about 5'2" and I used to wear very high heels. And
One day I was sat at my desk and I'd kicked my heel. I couldn't wear them now. I mean, I wear living trainers all the time, as I think most of us do. But I'd kicked my shoes under my desk, and I was having a slightly heated conversation with somebody I worked with. And he was quite a lot taller than me. I was sat down and I stood up to make my point and realised that my shoes were under the desk. So making this feeling of power to stand up with my high heels didn't work. And I was even smaller than I did. It always just makes me smile that I thought, for whatever reason, that standing up in a pair of heels, it's a bit like they say, if you get stopped by the police, you get out of your car and then you're not sat down. And I stood up and there were my shoes under the desk and this 6 foot something bloke, and it was really not the best thing to do.
But I suppose there in itself, there's a good example, isn't it, how we've moved on. Now we wear trainers or flats and don't actually even really care or think about it. But
I've got boxes of heels in the loft that grandchildren, I think, will potter around the house in or something at some point. Couldn't dream of wearing them now. No, absolutely.
You're right, Ed. You said enough of time I've spent in the industry, I could give you lots, but we'll keep it to probably one. There's a development in Cambridge called the Belvedere. I was working for Accent Property at the time, and we were very lucky that it was a brand new development of about 137 units. It was the first development in Cambridge to be built, which had a concierge, it had a swimming pool, a gym. So it was very much looked at as the high end quality of letting. Of course, it went global, and we have a lot of students come over from places like Dubai, Abu Dhabi. They're sponsored, they go to some very good colleges, and a lot of them go to ARU in Cambridge. And quite a lot of them have the name Prince or Princess in their names. So lovely people. However, quite a few of them started to turn up on our doorstep and wanting to rent these properties. And of course, landlords at the time, absolutely no to students, would not do it. So it became quite a challenge when we launched. We launched 40 units, including the penthouse, which was a two-storey duplex. And at the time, quite a high rent for Cambridge. It was about £2,000. So we used to have all these people coming in, some of them were bodyguards, chauffeur-driven cars and everything you could think of pulling up outside the door. And the bribes were quite high. And of course, we were made very clear, quite rightly, none of my staff, you can take bribes. So in the end, I had to sit at the front desk for about 3 weeks and turning all these away. And the best one I had was an albino camel. So I could have the ownership of this and they'd look after it for me, but could they move into the penthouse? And they'd also pay £3,500 a month if we allowed it. We explained to them, it doesn't get around the fact it's not a student property, even though they turned up with a suitcase full of cash trying to get this to happen. In the end, it turned out that because we said no, behind the scenes, and I still can't quite get to the bottom of it, but we do believe this person did move into the penthouse because the dad bought it. So renting didn't take part at the end. Actually, when he moved in, he was a true prince and he did have armed bodyguards. And I was collecting a friend from the Belvedere, and I met this person coming down the stairs. And the next thing he shouted at me, "Please don't move, Sarah." So I said, "Why?" He says, "Because there's a laser gun on the back of your head because you've approached me. So please don't move." And he had to give a signal to the actual marksman that he could not take me out because it was somebody that he knew. So, was probably the most interesting story I ever had.
And you never got the camel. You know, that's the thing. Like the camel.
No, one thing I'm very proud to say through my whole career, no, I've never taken anything to allow somebody to move into a property. So.
Okay, what I'd like to share is I've got a co-director called Dawn Bennett. She's been with me for, I always get this wrong and I get told off. She tells me off a lot, actually, 16 or 17 years. And it was a story about one day I found her on the tools. Now, she's
a very highly paid member of staff, and she was managing my whole management department and escalations team and everything. And it's one day I walked into the manager, there she was on the tools doing gas certs and actions and all that sort of stuff. And I said, what are you doing? She says, well, I'll just say Mary didn't turn up today, so I've had to step in. I said, that's not your job. You need to get someone else to do that because you're not doing your thing. Oh, well, this has got to be done. If I don't do it, who else is going to do it? Hey, what would you want me to do? Just to leave it. And the whole rant came. Dawn rants a lot, but then so do I. So we both rant. And I was just like, ah, anyway, next day came along on the tools again. I said, you know, anyway, she wasn't listening. Anyway, fast forward a few weeks later, I found her doing exactly the same again. This time, let's say Fred was off. I can't remember who it was. Someone was off. And there she was again. I said, Dawn, you've got to let go of these getting off the tools. I said, these are £10 an hour tasks. You are a hugely paid member of staff. This is not good sense. Why you're not doing that? You're not doing the contract audits. You're not doing the HMO audits. You're not doing the license audits. You're not overseeing the staff. You're not actually hiring another member of staff to replace the one that's just left. Ranting ensued. Anyway, I got really frustrated with this. So a few weeks later, I thought, right, I've got to stop this now. There she was again on the tools, covering for somebody else. And, you know, she hadn't hired someone to replace this person. So she was now actually becoming part of the problem because she needed to hire someone, but she wasn't doing that because she was too busy doing the actions, which she was ranting at. And I was just like, ah! So I says, right. I went into and I said, Dawn, this is how it's going to be. I said, I've tried to ask you politely. I said, you're doing £10 an hour tasks. I says, from now on, this system tracks how many hours you're on there doing those actions. From now on, I'm going to pay you £10 an hour for every hour you sit at that desk and work on those actions. And she literally stopped typing, looked at me. If you know Dawn, you can see the look in your mind.
She looked
at me and said, you can't do that. And I went, watch me.
Anyway. It's actually making me think of my own, the things I do though, and my team are probably going, yep, that is you, Heidi, you do that. And it is just such an invaluable lesson, because a comfortable place is to drop back, isn't it? And also because we've potentially done that role or done that thing in the past, we just think we can do it again, and actually time's moved on in that time as well. So thank you so much, Sally. For our listeners, to ensure you never miss an episode of Let's Talk Let's, please follow us on Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcast. Please leave us a review if you like what you hear, or if you have an idea about what you'd like to hear. And thank you very much for listening. To ensure you never miss an episode of Let's Talk Let's, please follow us on Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcast. And please leave us a review. And thank you all for listening.
Let's Talk Let's, an original podcast from the Lettings Hub.